The world is changing. What you know today might not be what you will know tomorrow. This is the Outlook Podcast. I'm your host, Otieto Guguyu, from Oros, East Africa. And today we have joined with a special guest, Florence Anam from GNB Plus, who has witnessed something incredible that is happening in our world today. Just to give you a bit of background, I grew up in an estate called USAID in Kisumu here. So we literally lived in an estate called USAID. It was built by some very tiny houses that were built by USAID at some point. Mm-hmm. So I know people who lived in that place, like when we hear USAID is over, mm-hmm. you know what that comes to our mind, like that sort of American presence that was in Africa is not there anymore. And I'm sure for you, it means a lot of things to a lot of different people. So you just first tell me, what does like the disappearance of USAID mean?
And I will probably be a little controversial here. I think for me, it means different things. For me, USAID has been a reflection of the HIV journey, this moment now. And everyone is crying and sad and everything. And to some degree, the loss is palpable. So you cannot feel a certain type of way about it. But if I go back to what it was when they came here, I don't want that. Mm-hmm. So I like to say, for instance, the way me and people living with HIV like me have experienced USAID primarily has been through PEPFAR. Started by Bush over 26 years ago, PEPFAR is in itself the Presidential Emergency Aid Relief for Africa. Presidential Emergency Aid Relief for Africa. At that time, we were in the heart of the emergency experience of the HIV epidemic. People were dying. Kids were orphaned. Mm-hmm. That's why you probably had a little village built for you, because there was probably a whole ecosystem that was broken that needed to be rescued. And they have stayed with us and they have graduated us, where us is people living with HIV and those impacted by it, from where the epidemic was an emergency to the point where we know we can end AIDS as a public health threat. We can end AIDS deaths. We can end new infections. We know what we need to do. And that is victory. And so for me, I look at it like it has served us so well. And maybe this change is the realization that we need to shift to something much more, something that is not needed in an emergency, because you cannot operate as if you're in an emergency in an environment when you're not in an emergency. Certain things start to happen. We a little lose the way. We overbloat things. We become inefficient. And I think most of those things is why they are doing the shifts or the realities of what's happening in the US. So we are not without critique. I think, and I'm hungry for that conversation, where we also sit and critique ourselves to what is being said of these structures and of the aid and what it's then ended up doing. All of it is good, but there are better ways from which we can now move, as we are no longer in an emergency. I like to ask, do we need a PEPFAR? We are no longer in an emergency. So what else do we need moving forward? And maybe this is the period for defining what that is. So that's how I internalize it. It's painful like any change. There's lots of loss. I'm scared. It's anxiety inducing, but it's also an opportunity to innovate and figure out what new could there be. And knowing this sector, we will come out at the other end better than we were last year.
Being in leadership in terms of turmoil like this must be quite challenging, because you're looking around you and if everything is collapsing, everybody is seeing panic. What are you seeing right now?
Frankly, opportunity. And it's a choice, I think, for leaders. And I like to say, what are the leaders needed now? And we went through our own change process last year, and change is hard. So I think maybe we sort of are not fully weaned out of the idea of, oh, this is change and you have to go through change in these hard ways. But my co-executive director and I looked at this from the moment it started. We were actually in Washington the week this happened. And we were like, and quickly made a decision about what it is we will do with it. And we will not go into the vortex. We will stand on this side and be the opportunity that creates the hope required, that provides for an alternative narrative, that provides for the next level thinking. And we've continuously held that ground in this way, understanding that there are different players in the sector and there are people who must push for what can be won with the decisions. But for us, the moment the waiver, the moment the stop work order started, people walked into the facility, people living with HIV walked into the facility and there was no doctor. So our reality is a bit different. Yeah. For us, it's we don't have treatment and we must have treatment because if we don't have it, we will die. So the push becomes about something else. So it's how do we get to discuss with who to get what? When the waiver came, we were excited about it, but it's how do we understand what's happening in different countries so we can show that. But also looking at our colleagues at country level and seeing, because they don't have the luxury to sit with the policies that are going wrong and to sit with the policymakers and to go at them, they're addressing the people who are panicking right at their doorstep. So watching the leadership at country level motivated us because they're sitting there running to their governments, fixing things, trying to figure out emergency responses, negotiating. Okay. Deploy doctors, even if they're not HIV doctors, but at least there's a doctor who can prescribe. You know, there are all these things that they are doing at country level and we felt, oh, there's a whole narrative happening here and let's go probably and help build that. And so that's what we've been doing. And it's been taking its own way and shape and form as people living with HIV leadership, working with their governments and partners in country, work towards keeping people on treatment, which is pretty much the basis of this work.
Which is what we're going towards. The final point is going back to the basics and really rethinking things, because we want to talk to people who are not necessarily only in your field, because this is going to affect a lot of places. USAID was actually feeding us; they were giving us maize. They were looking at the weather and predicting when the next El Nino will come. They were doing too many things. It's like there was a parent here who was doing all our bidding, and then he's gone. How do you move from that and now start to look like at a very different places where there's no more parent here giving us money?
So I think because USAID is the loudest and is probably more visible, that's what people are seeing. From our point, we see a retrogression of all governments and their aid. So Germany, Netherlands, UK, they've all cut aid with up to 30% for some. Only Ireland has increased to 50%, but it's not like, you know, so it's just one in many. But also now there's also something going on there now, so we don't know. But my point is, for me, this is not about the US. We are going through a cultural shift here. And I think it's questioning a lot of things. Can economies run on aid, for instance? Is this what the governments of Africa want, for instance? I had a conversation with someone last week and I asked, has any of our governments walked anywhere to ask? And you know, our governments have reached out to the US and they're interested in strengthening AGOA. None of them has gone there with this matter. We are the ones screaming here crazy. So because they know they've got it, they are telling us we want to handle and lead our HIV responses right now. We may need this help and this and this, but we need to be able to lead it now. So I think we are in a process of shift, and we, as the noise quietens down now, we'll start to see that this is not about one country. It's just a broader social shift. You think USAID is a parent? I kind of like to say the US is that firstborn that has gotten to their 40s and is done with all of us. We need to go fix our lives. And maybe it's the chance to sit here and imagine a life where there was no aid. I started working in this field when the USAID wasn't there, PEPFAR wasn't there. And we were really doing the basic of the basic work, which was just keeping people alive. And maybe the work won't be as sophisticated or elitist anymore. But I feel like sometimes when there's reduced or scarcity, we are called to really prioritize and be efficient. And maybe that's what we will get out of this process. And maybe then our governments will be able to take leadership. And we as its citizens would be able to ask of them to lead us efficiently with the taxes we pay and things like that, which we haven't been doing. We would make better leadership decisions. So I see opportunity for so many things that I hope once we absorb the pain of loss, which is very valid, we can also have a moment to see.
Thank you so much for sharing those insights with our guests. This has been the Outlook Podcast with a very interesting take. In these times of scarcity, there is opportunity. In these times of scarcity, there is the most efficient ideas will rise to the top. This has been the Outlook Podcast. I'm your host, Odieto Guguyu. Keep it on all East Africa News. Thank you.